Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to another edition of your favourite podcast, Insane in the Fembrain. Hello everybody, welcome to the show. The weather's heating up. Ah, I love it. I love springtime. Gets hotter, doesn't it? I love it. We're walking around in our shirts, smashing stuff. I love it. Listen, before we get into it, I have to remember to do the admin first. I always get carried away, get chuntering on. So, firstly, over on Insane in the Membrane this week, it's a simulcast. I appeared on the Mischa Schubelei podcast, my great friend out there in Phoenix, Arizona. So that's what's coming out this week. That's going to be on our Insane in the Membrane channel. So that's what's happening over there this week. Also, become a Patreon for early access to behind the scenes video recordings. So go to patreon.com/membrane podcast or via our link tree, which is in this podcast and all of our podcasts and all over my social media. So if you go to Instagram, I am Rich Wilson on Instagram. There's going to be a link in the bio there, Linktree. On Twitter, which is I am Rich Wilson again. I'm on Facebook. All of the across the board, there's a link to the Linktree. And if you click on that, that will take you to all that you need to do. So Patreon, it takes you to gigs where I'm going to be. It's all there. Producer Paul smashed it out of the park. It's all there. One link, click on that, and it's all there for you. But yeah, become a Patreon. And then you can become part of a very beautiful bunch of people, like Magza Doodle. She signed up. Thank you, Mags. Neil Reese. Hello, mate. Thank you very much. And the mighty David Harris for your continued support. You're a beautiful, beautiful man. He's loving these extras, and you will as well. So join up. Go to our patreon.com/podcast, membrane podcast page, and join in. Come and join in. And also, you can also send messages to us to say, look, I want to hear this, or I want to do that. And can you do this? Can you do that? You become almost like a producer. So do that for us. That'd be fantastic. Also, check out stylish Insane in the Membrane t-shirts from buythatmerch.co.uk. Also, I don't need to tell you, but for new listeners, they're the guys from Save Our Souls Clothing doing our merch for us. Now they've got buythatmerch.co.uk. Good lads doing good things. It's vegan friendly, ethically sourced. It's wonderful. You're going to really enjoy that. Also, go to Wogan Coffee for our Insane in the Membrane exclusive coffee beans. They're based in Bristol. If you use the exclusive Membrane listener promo code Membrane, that's one word, for 10% off of our podcast packs. Again, click the link in the links for Linktree. Click the links in the links for Linktree. And that takes you to everything you need. It's all there for you. One click and you're there. Woo! We got there. That's the admin done. Everyone all right? You good? Well, I hope so. Honestly, the episode with Mischa that I did, people that have already listened, Mischa's been on Insane in the Membrane himself. I first became aware of Mischa through Doug Stanhope and his work with him. And then I've been reading recently Mark Lanigan's book, Sing Backwards and Weep. And Mischa was the editor of that, because he was really good friends with Mark Lanigan of Screaming Trees, Queen of the Stone Age, who sadly passed away recently. So it was good to hook up with him again. So it's a really nice chat with him. We really got stuck in. It's nice. It was nice to have a chat. He's a good lad. And I hope you're all right. It's a funny old time. It is a funny old time, but. And I've learned this as well. Like last couple of weeks, people have been, I've been saying to people, I have been struggling a little bit, struggling to reach out and talk to people, because you just build it up in your head, didn't you? Like, phone calls that need to be made and all that sort of thing. And then I did. I saw my good friend John Gamer. Hello, John. And we had a good chat the other day. That was lovely. So things are starting to level out again because I'm facing up to the things. Instead of burying my head in the sand, I'm getting stuck in and doing the things. And the things I thought were monsters are actually not. They're no more than puppies. So, you know, I've got sorted out. I advise you to do that as well. So this week's guest is Lizzie Pollard. Now, Lizzie Pollard is, she works at Acast. She's behind the scenes at Acast. And she's a wonderful woman. And I talked to her a little while ago because we've got mutual friends in Vix Layton and Dave Cribb. And I was like, yeah, let's get on, have a chat. And what a chat we had. Honestly, we covered so many things. It really takes a turn, which you'll hear in the episode. I won't give you any spoilers, but it really goes from one thing to another pretty drastically and then comes out the other side in another place we never expected to go to. You're really going to enjoy this one. Lizzie's fantastic. She's an inspirational woman. So, again, chuntering on, you might as well listen to it. So, coming up in a minute is Lizzie Pollard.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
A podcast from producer paul.co.uk.
Hi, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. Good to see you.
You too.
I love having producer Paul because he's such a nerd for all this. He loves all the tech and everything. It's brilliant.
I feel embarrassed, like I should actually know more about when he was like, your mic's back to front. I was like, yeah, knew that. That was deliberate.
I did it all the time. I just go, oh, that looks nice that way. And he's like, no, can't eat you. Ah, good. You're looking well. You all right?
Yeah, good. I'm good. Easter is my favourite time of the year. So this is like Christmas Eve for me.
Beautiful. Yeah, really? You really like it?
I love it. There's no pressure to Easter. Not like Christmas or,
yeah, that's
you
true,
know.
Actually. Yeah. I think the eggs are getting more adventurous as well. I saw some really wicked ones in M&S the other day. Oh God, who am I?
You changed.
I really have. It used to be, yeah, let's get out, get smashed. And it's like, I saw these wonderful eggs. I've got fruit in there, lovely.
I saw some crunchy eggs last night. I've not seen them before. I said to my partner, Adam, I was like, if you see them in a shop, you've got to buy them for me.
Oh, nice. Actual crunchy. Oh, it's so bad. When you're eating it, you can feel your teeth rotting, but you're like, yeah, this is the one, though.
This is that Friday feeling.
There's no big introduction. We just do this. This is what we do. We just chat.
Totally fine.
And there you go. Good. So it's lovely to have you on. We were going to do this ages ago, and my lack of admin skills time just seems to be rattling away. You just kind of go, oh, I must do that. And all of a sudden it's like 2 months have passed.
Oh, don't worry. I'm always happy to talk. I've been so looking forward to it as well.
Yeah.
Because I've listened to the show and I've listened to, you know, a few of my friends on it, and I was like, oh, I can't wait to get into it with Rich.
I love it. I love this, getting to know people. And because, you know, obviously I know you through Acast, but I always fascinated by the people behind these things. You know, like when I spoke to 76, who produces a lot of stuff for Scroobius Pip and that.
Mm.
I'm just interested in the, because I think sometimes the people behind the things get forgotten about. Do you know what I mean? It's all about who's up front and who's this and that. But there's a lot of work goes into the stuff behind the scenes. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, there is. Yeah. There is. Yeah. I mean, even just talking about producer Paul there, like, yeah. You know, the amount of effort that goes in, even just to get a conversation like this happening. And that's before you've got into starting a podcast, growing a podcast, making money from a podcast and everything else. But I'm obsessed with podcasting. I don't know about you.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I found is working in podcasting, just everyone in podcasting is so lovely. I've met the nicest people. I mean, everyone likes to talk about, you know, podcasting so community driven, and they use the word community a lot. And I think to people on the outside, they could be like, yeah, right, that's probably just marketing speak. But when I started working in podcasting 4 and a bit years ago, I was just shocked by how lovely and supportive and kind everyone is to each other.
Yeah.
You don't get that. I feel like you don't get that sense of competition that you probably get in other industries. Because people love the medium and people want to help each other out. So
absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true. Everyone's so encouraging. Like I've said, last week, our guest was Stu Whiffin, who's Hardcore Listings. I love Stu. And this podcast wouldn't exist without him and Chris. And everyone that involved with their podcast. And yeah, you're right. Every time you speak to someone, people are always going, there's a lot of people taking the piss online and they're all like, oh, yeah, that's what we need, another podcast. And you're like, why are you just going to do one then? They're easy to do. There's so many people doing it and will help you, like you've just said.
The things that wind me up are, oh, don't need another podcast, do we? And as you say, everyone's interests are so different and so specific.
Yeah.
I also truly believe that most people in the world have something interesting to say.
Yeah.
Like whether you agree with it or whether you like it, then that's fine. If it's not for you, it's not for you. But people are just fascinating. And but this is why the question that always makes me laugh, people say, oh, what do you do? And I say, I work in podcasts. And if they know what podcasts are, they always say, oh, could you recommend me some to listen to? And I'm like, well, I could, but my taste is so unique. You're probably not going to enjoy the specific vein of, you know, football comedy podcasts that I like. And that's a beautiful thing about podcasting. And the other thing that really winds me up is people that moan about ads in podcasting.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, for the majority, podcasts are free because they have this beautiful ad-funded model. So that's why it doesn't cost you anything to go to Apple Podcasts and hit play on this podcast, for example. So then when I see people moaning about them, like listeners, I'm like, guys, come on. Do you know how this works?
Yeah, I know. I know. It's the same with YouTube. People moan about that. And it is a bit frustrating because it's the adverts cut in at, like, inopportune moments, but at the same time they do give you the option to pay for it and nobody does, so you go like, well, you're gonna have to kind of put up with that, you know. It's just, and it's not like it's hours out of your day, it's just a brief moment, a brief moment. It's like with, like you say, with the adverts on podcasts, it's just a brief moment and then you'll get to it.
And this is going to sound like I'm really corporate and on message, but I genuinely mean this. Some of the podcasts I listen to, I love their ads. Like if you think about Adam Buxton, you know, we get people. So for listeners that don't know, so I work for Acast, who host and help podcasts make money, and we look after the advertising basically. And, you know, we get listeners who tweet us or email us saying, oh, I heard this brilliant song on Adam's podcast, but I can't find it again now, and I really want to hear it again. And we're like, well, one, that was an advert, and two, of course you can't hear it because they're all dynamically inserted. So what you hear one week, you probably won't hear the next week, and so on and so forth. But yeah, I think, yeah. But it's fine. It is what it is. People love to complain about things online, don't they? We all know that.
Yeah, they do. They do. Well, the beautiful thing about podcasting is that it's still, you can still say what you like. It's very much like the pirate radio stuff that I used to listen to when I was a kid, listening to Radio Caroline and Radio Laser, and they were just, they weren't sticking to everything else. They were just playing whatever they wanted. They were saying whatever they wanted. It's very much open ground at the minute, and I like that.
And I hope it never changes. And I find it really funny because that is a beautiful thing about it. And you will hear conversations on podcasts that would never make it past like a written interview or a TV interview or something, because they're so much more controlled.
Yeah.
And then sometimes some of our podcasters say to me, they're like, you'll never believe it. I told a story about, I don't know, fly fishing, and I ended up catching a shoe, and it ended up in the Daily Mail. And like, and I'm like, yeah, because podcasts drive the news agenda now. Like it used to be 3 years ago, it was like so-and-so posted on Instagram this or so-and-so tweeted that now. And if you look at it now, 9 times out of 10, that sort of more sort of celebrity gossip is like so-and-so said on a podcast. But yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, I could talk about podcasts all day. I mean, I do talk about podcasts all day. It's literally my job.
But you know, it's funny what you say about the you don't realise, because I had Jenny Ryan on from The Chase. And I'm mates with Jenny. And so we were just chatting away. And she made some... And then after the episode went out, there was... Yeah, I got this email from the papers, and they were just going, we want to use your... We want to use a quote from your podcast. Do you give us permission? And I spoke to Jenny and I went, look, I've just had this. And we were racking our brains. Like, we didn't say anything that was kind of controversial. We didn't say anything that was going to cause a fuss. She was saying, oh, maybe it's because she talked about her love life and the papers are obsessed with the Chasers and their love lives. And so we were like, oh, maybe it's that. But then when they went with it anyway. And then when it came out, it was something, she'd made some throwaway comment about Davina McCall. And they trying to turn it into the pair of them had beef. And you're like, what? It was just a comment about something Davina had said about something, and Jenny was sort of talking about it. And it's crazy that podcasting is now where they go, like you say. Or it's the tweets as well. Like, I saw a thing the other day, someone had passed away. Everything was from Twitter. The comments were all from Twitter. You know, it's funny.
But I do hope it never changes, though, because you know what makes podcasting great is that freedom and the fact that people can feel open and honest and can have conversations and that people want to listen to. And the minute it starts getting too sanitized or people say, I can't talk about that, I won't talk about that, then game's gone, as my partner would say. Game's gone, mate.
Do you find are Acast under pressure all the time for people trying to change it, trying to own it, trying to make it more, I don't know, every time the corporate side of things tries to get involved, it's always about they want to make money from it, so they try and, I don't know, privatise it, if you will.
Well, no, so I mean, again, it sounds like I'm very on message, but I mean all this. The good thing about Acast is, you know, we don't really get involved in the content at all. It's up to you to make the content. You make the podcast you want to make, and then we'll help you grow it and make the money from it. So we're never going to say, oh, Rich, you know, you shouldn't have had that Lizzie Pollitt on as a guest because your listening figures are going to tank. And so not at all. So it's not really a concern of ours as Acast. I can't speak for other maybe competitors or platforms who are much more in the business of making content. I also think it's an opportunity, though, because, you know, we're constantly spotting trends or like gaps in the market. So everyone says, oh, podcasting's oversaturated, too many people are making podcasts. But actually, sometimes we're like, we need more. You know, a few years ago, it was like, we need more health and fitness or women's health and fitness podcasts because advertisers are crying out for them. So I think there's definitely some good opportunities to be able to, you know, find some of the niches and the sort of formula that works really well as well. But more often than not, the most successful podcast, there is absolutely no rhyme or reason. There's no formula. If you look at the top 10 on Apple Podcasts right now, it's probably, I think, if I remember correctly, Crouchy, number one.
Yep.
Talking, I was going to say nonsense, that sounds derogatory, but, you know, talking fun stuff about football. I think that Diary of a CEO is number two, business. Then you've got your Shag Married Annoyed, which is, you know, a couple arguing, more than that, obviously. You've got your Off Menu guys randomly talking about football. Like, there is no uniformity or rhyme or reason at all.
No, not at all.
And that's, again, that's what makes it beautiful.
Yeah.
Direction once said. Nah.
What got you into it? What got you? What made you? Oh, did you just go, oh, it's just a job I'm kind of interested in?
No, the opposite, Rich, the opposite. So I was an obsessive radio person when I was a kid and a teenager.
Right.
So I grew up and I was very much of the era of Mark and Lard. Brilliant. Comedy Dave and Chris Moyles.
Oh, amazing.
Joe Wiley and Steve Lamacq of the evening. So I'm not kidding when I say in my teenage years, there wasn't a Radio 1 show that I didn't appear on in some form.
Oh, really?
So I used to constantly phone in. So in the olden days, kids listening, we didn't have mobile phones. There was no texting. I used to sit by my parents' landline and I used to incessantly dial the Radio 1 number until someone picked up and then to get on whatever show it was, whether that was like a competition or, you know, like a call-in or whatever. I was absolutely obsessed with radio. So then what happened was, went to uni. I wasn't involved in the student radio, but a lot of my friends were. And I went to the University of Nottingham, which is famed for having a really good radio station.
Okay.
And one of my best friends at the time, Christian Nash, who's also worked on Capital and things, he used to have a Thursday night show. And I knew that not many people listened because no one was really listening to student radio. So what I used to do to make him feel good is I would text him from about 10 different numbers, text into the show with different names saying, loving the show, Christian, or play us some, what was it back then? Play us some Top Loader, Christian. So anyway, so I was obsessed with radio. And then I used to work in advertising and marketing. And then it got to the point where I was like, okay, now's the time to go and do something, focus on something I really am obsessed with. And I literally one day wrote a list of my obsessions, which was basically podcasts, running, football. I contacted every company within those sort of areas. And long story short, 2 months later, I was working at Acast.
Amazing.
And what I'd found was that I was following many of my like heroes at the time who were moving into podcasting. And I have actually ended up now working along some of those people that I used to idolize. And I have to pinch myself every day. I'm like, how has this happened? You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was because I think there is that element of podcasting is so hot now that naturally there are people that will go, oh, podcasting's hot. I want a piece of that. I'm going to go and work in podcasting. And then there are people who are just genuinely love the medium,
yeah,
genuine fans. And it's just, what can I say? It's an absolute dream. I'm not going to lie to you.
It really is. It's one of the best things I've ever done that I kind of, like I say, fell into. It was just talking to Stu and Chris and then... And then Brad Acton, who actually was working with them, and he got in touch. And so now you're doing it, and it's amazing. And there are up till recently, I was having a bit of a wobble recently. I was a bit like, oh, does anyone care? Is anyone listening to this? Anyone give a shit? But luckily, producer Paul knows about all the numbers, and he's like, Richie, look at this. And I'm like, oh, shit, yeah, sorry, mate. And all the messages you get from people, like you say, you're building up a community, people that love it. And it's a beautiful thing. Like, I'm a comedian by trade, and if you had the same amount of people that listen to your podcast every week coming to one of your shows, you'd be elated. And it's a beautiful thing.
And you're so right. So I have about 2.5 lapsed podcasts. Okay, I call myself a lapsed podcaster because I just don't have the time at the minute. But so I used to do one about Strictly Come Dancing with my sister.
Yeah.
Because we love Strictly Come Dancing. My sister lives in Melbourne, and I found it was a really nice way for us to keep in touch every week, this set time to talk, just to talk rubbish about, you know, Anton's dance last night or whatever. And one day someone at work said to me, why do you carry on making your podcast when you know only like a handful of people, for example, are listening? And I was like, well, first of all, I'm deriving so much enjoyment just from like doing it. And I was also like, if one person listens that week and it like has a laugh or gets something out of it, then that's all I care about.
That's
like,
true, yeah.
I don't care if it's like 1 million people or if it's one person. Like, why, you know, why would I stop doing something I love? You know, because I have the luxury of doing it as a hobby. But yeah, I used to have, do you know John Harris at Acast?
No, I don't know.
So John calls himself the nephew of podcasting. He works closely with Pip as well on lots of distraction pieces stuff. And we constantly have this conversation because he has a podcast and he's like, oh, why am I doing it? And I keep giving these pep talks. I'm like, John, I listen every week and I freaking love it. So you are not stopping because, you know, you are making a difference to people's lives. So
absolutely. Yeah. Oh,
Just to butt in with that one as well. John's a big fan of this podcast.
I was going
to
say, I do know John.
He does support us, yeah.
Yeah, I do know John. Yeah, I do. Sorry, I apologise. It was though, because there's an actor called Johnny Harris.
Oh.
And I was like, John Harris, yeah. But I do know John, yes. And I think John put together some artwork when I I think I've done all of the podcasts on distraction pieces. And
yeah.
he did it. And I think he did some artwork. I'm like Thanos of the podcast world.
Yeah. John is one of the best. Like, there is nothing that John doesn't know about particularly comedy podcasting. So I don't know if you've seen, we've done quite a lot of stuff with Comic Relief over the last few years. So
recently
we did this big mashup. So you get Menus to Be Buried With, for example, where
brilliant.
Brett goes on off menu and they swap formats. That was all John's idea and amazing. Work, and he made all that happen. And you know, he's actually not—he's not one for taking a lot of praise, so he'll be so embarrassed if he listens to this. So there you go, John. I'm giving you the airtime you deserve.
We love you, John.
We love you, John.
Well, this is it. It's people like that that are like, with like again, like producer Paul. Producer Paul loves what we do, and it's his energy that keeps us going, because I wobble and I get a little bit, you know, because of outside things, not because of the podcast. And then he's always there to just go, mate, come on, we're smashing this. And that's what you need, someone that's so passionate about it as well, that also pumps you up and keeps you going. It's a beautiful thing.
You need a hype man. A hype pod man.
That's it. Yeah,
he is. Yeah, he smashes it.
There's moments of self doubt.
Yeah. And I get them all the time because I'm a fucking idiot.
Yeah, but we all get like that, don't we? You know, I talked to Vix. Obviously, you're really good friends with my friend Vix Layton, and I love Comedy Arcade, and she has done an amazing job on that. I have not seen someone work so hard on a podcast, I would say, than the work she's done on Comedy Arcade. And I'm like, Vix, just keep going. It's just great. Like, you've hit a great idea. You're getting great guests, and just makes me laugh every week.
Oh, I love it. And it's now become, I'm like the Alan Davis to her Sandy Toksvig. And I love that. Well, it's such a nice place to be. And like, yeah. And I mean, like, even though I have self-doubt, but when it comes to other people, I'm like, nah, man, you're smashing it. You can do, you got this. It's a strange one.
Well, I have to say, without blowing smoke up your ass, I came on Comedy Arcade last year, it was, and it was me, you, and Robin Ince. And yes. I'd never really done anything. Like, well, Vix is constantly trying to convince me to get into stand-up comedy.
I think you should do it.
Well, we'll talk about that in a sec. But anyway, so she asked me to come on the podcast, and I was like, yeah. And then I didn't really think about it. And then I was like, oh, okay. I'm now going on with like proper professional comedians here. And I was a bit like, what am I doing? And you and Robin were just so lovely and made me just feel so comfortable and sort of welcome.
Thank you. That's how it should be.
No, it is how it should be. But I read a lot about comedy. I'm also a comedy nerd. And, you know, you hear about particularly women sometimes in comedy feeling uncomfortable or like they don't get to speak or get their point across. And I, you know, it was such a lovely experience. And I think that's also testament to sort of the environment that and the way that Vix has developed that podcast as well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But yeah, I've been promising Vix that I'd get into stand-up comedy for, well, you might know, were you ever at, when a musical did the TV show and they had a little sort of preview of it at Backyard Comedy Club?
Yes, I do remember.
Yeah. So I was there, and that's when I ran into Vix for the first time in years, because we used to work together. And she said to me then, promise me that you'll try comedy. Go on, promise. All you have to do is just come along and do 2 minutes at like a night that I'm putting on.
Yeah.
And I think this was about 3 years ago or whatever. And I was like, yeah. Still not done it. Just haven't found the time. But I was listening to some of your interviews, and I was like, oh man, I just got to bite the bullet.
Yeah, you just got to do it. It's the hardest bit with comedy, it's not about writing material. It's not, the hardest bit is actually doing it in the first place. Once you make that first step to do it, especially as you're not doing it because you don't necessarily want to become a comedian. You want to just do it and see what happens. There's no pressure. You've literally just got to turn up and tell a story. That's it.
Yeah, and as I say, I've also been a comedy nerd for years, so this is going to sound really weird, but trust me on this. So I sleep with a copy of a book next to my bed. It's not the Bible. It's Stuart Lee's How I Escaped My Certain Fate as a Stand-Up Comedian.
Brilliant book.
So I was such a big Stuart Lee fan, and I actually got through to the final face-to-face round of auditions for Mastermind.
Wow.
And my specialist subject was the life and work of Stuart Lee. And they said, oh, you need 4 subjects, because if you get through every round, you have to have a different subject each time. So my second was the life and work of Frank Skinner.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I've been you know, I've gone deep on comedy for years, and I've seen Stuart live more times than I care to remember, and I just love going to live comedy as well. So yeah, maybe it's time.
You've got to do it. I think you've got to do it. And I will say, I love a sentence that starts with this might be a bit weird. I love anything that starts like that. I'm like, oh, this is going to be great. I'm looking forward to whatever comes next.
I've got plenty more where that came from.
I felt really clever after I'd read Stuart's book because of all the footnotes. It was like a choose your own adventure going back and forth.
Yeah. Well, it inspired me. So I don't know which came first, but so I went to university and I studied French, and I had to do a lot of French literature, and I had to write a dissertation. I ended up writing a dissertation about the use of footnotes in books, in literature. And I don't know whether Stuart's book inspired me to go deep into that, or it was that's why I enjoyed Stuart's book so much. But it is for anyone who's interested in comedy in general, or particularly, you know, the alternative comedy scene, the birth of comedy, alternative comedy in the 80s and 90s, it is well worth a read. There we go. I'm just doing a job here. Seems to be plugging Stuart Lee's books, but
no, you're right. You're absolutely right. It's but this is it. People listen to this, and they, you know, this is what they want. They want to know. They'll pick all different things. So if people that want to start in comedy, they want to know how to do it, or podcasting, or just anything really. You know, like, so this is great. This is great content, as they say.
Great content.
Yeah, great content, man. But this, yeah. But there is, I like Steve Martin's book as well, Born Standing Up.
I've not read that.
Oh, it's fantastic. And there's also the audiobook of him reading it. And it's brilliant because he just talks about the fact that he died on his ass for years.
Yeah.
Years. And he just kept going. And it's a really fascinating book for anyone interested in comedy.
Oh, maybe I'll look it up. Talking of audiobooks, are you into audiobooks yourself?
Yes, I am actually. I'm starting.
So I can't get my head around them. Okay, because I don't read. I read about one book a year when I go on holiday.
Right.
Because I think maybe 10 years ago I would have been reading. Where I'm now, I'm just scrolling my phone constantly, as we all know.
As we all know.
But I can't get my head around listening to an audiobook because I'm like, well, I may as well just listen to another podcast. The only time I did it was one of James Acaster's books, and he reads it, and I was like, okay, I'll give it a go. And I mean, I really enjoyed it, but I don't know, I can't get my head around them.
Well, do you know what I do? I won't listen to everything, but if there's someone I'm really into, I'll have the audiobook and I'll have the physical copy. So I'll read it with the person reading it. And I'm sort of reading it. So it helps me because I get distracted otherwise. I'll be like four pages in and I'm like, I've been reading it, but none of this has gone in.
Yeah.
So I have to be really focused and go, right, I'm going to do this for a bit now and then I'm going to do something else. But for a minute, I just want to do this. I normally do it late at night when I'm just, because I used to look at my phone before bed and it used to drive me mad because you couldn't sleep. But now I read a book and try and calm down, and it's good to have the person's voice in your ears as you're reading it.
I might try, but I can't promise anything.
No. Bob Mortimer's is a good one.
Ah, yeah. I did think the other day that might be a good one to try.
That's one. I think that's one to go with.
Okay, I'll do. Yeah. I'll do my homework. I promise. By the next time I speak to you, I'll have listened to Bob Mortimer's audiobook.
But I've got Doug Stanhope's Digging Up Mother on audiobook. That's really cool because he not only reads the book, but he also goes off on tangents and talks about the bits behind the stories. And he's got guests on who were actually there when this story was taking place. And he's talking to them and it goes back and forth. And it's really interesting. So I might send you that and just have a listen to that.
Okay.
I don't know how you feel about dogs in the book.
Well, yeah, no. That'd be interesting. Have you ever thought about writing a book yourself?
All the time. I was thinking about it yesterday. I just had this idea yesterday. But what I want is to have the idea, write it all down, have it finished, give it to someone, they go, that's brilliant, and then off you go. But it's all the back and forth and the editing.
No notes, please.
No, I don't, just, is it good or bad? Just, it's done now. How about yourself?
No.
No.
Okay, because my problem is, this is going to sound, again, she's starting, but this is going to sound weird, but I'm convinced, and I'm going to say it out loud on this podcast, I'm convinced I have a hit comedy show, TV show within me. I've been writing one in inverted commas for a couple of years now. And my problem is, therefore, is I'm so convinced that that's what I'm going to do next in my life, that every time another creative endeavor pops up, like, shall I start another podcast or shall I, you know, write a book or whatever? I'm like, no, because that's creative time I'm not putting towards the thing that I actually want to do. But then I don't actually do that, so I end up doing none of it. Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes absolute sense. Absolute sense.
And I am, I have quite a demanding job. And so come the evenings, my brain is frazzled and all I want to do is watch, Friday Night Lights or whatever we're currently watching. And then the weekend, it's like, well, there's too much other stuff to be doing. I don't want to sit inside and be typing. And so then I think, well, I'll wait for holiday. And then I go on holiday and you don't want to be on a computer on holiday. So it just, it's just endless cycles. So I'm like, until I'm not working, which I love every day, then maybe this is just going to stay in stasis, but fine, whatever.
But I think what you want to do, and this is what happened with me, you want to hook up with somebody that has got that, or work with someone that's in that world or has got that kind of thing that can help you with it, get the idea out of your head. So I did some writing courses last year, and one of the people that did the course was an old friend of mine called Ren, and I used to know her years ago. She used to be at the Comedy Cafe in East London, and she went off and then went off to the New York Film Academy and studied there and has gone on now. She's making films and things like that. And then we got talking, and then she sent me some things she's working on, and I was so excited to read them. And I'm like, oh man, this is amazing. This is incredible. This is that. And we had this back and forth. She's living in Sydney. So the timing, we had to make sure the timings worked, all that. It was brilliant. And then one day she said, have you got any ideas? And I gave her this idea. And then she came back to me, she went, right, this is what we're doing. But, and then it's now we're working on this film.
Wow.
And you're like, it wouldn't have gone anywhere if I hadn't spoken to someone that is actually in that world. And she's shown me how you do it. You know, we haven't worked it for a while because we've both been busy, but she showed me how to do it. Like, even when, like, the beginning, you're not even writing dialogue. You're setting out the universe that your characters are in. You're talking about all the characters and why the characters are in each other's lives. It's a fascinating process. Mm. And that all came from being with someone that's in that realm. So that's what you'd need to do. And, well, I think, and you must know someone.
Well, I had a near miss. Well, right. So your friend and mine, my BFF, Dave Cribb.
Ah, I love Cribby. Dave Cribb all day long.
Yeah. So January before the pandemic, we decided we were going to write a pop punk musical.
Okay.
Set in a high school. So we're both obsessed with sort of like early noughties pop punk. So like Sum 41, Blink 182, all that kind of era.
Yeah.
So I was like, Dave, this is perfect. You can do the music and I'll write the book, as they say, the script. I'm like, great, great, great. Fast forward 2 months, global pandemic hits, everything quietens down. We've got nothing to do, you know. Do you think we actually put our minds to writing this musical? No, of course we didn't. So that was, two, 3 years ago. And then we were going to last year, he'll probably kill me for giving away the secret because he claims it's still going to happen. We were going to make a podcast about the Muppets Christmas Carol where we watched 90 seconds, I think, or was it 3 minutes, of the Muppets Christmas Carol film every day and podcasted about that sort of 90 seconds, whatever it was. So I was like bang up for it. I started writing a plan. He's like, oh, I'm busy. Let's see. Oh, I don't know if we can do it this year. Maybe we need to do it next year. And let's start in July 2022. So, Dave, if you're listening, we've got about 2 months left before we need to start. So I thought I'd found my creative partner that could hold me accountable. It turns out he's just as busy / distracted as I am.
And Dave's great. I think that's a fantastic idea.
Well, which one? The musical or the
musical?
Muppets?
The musical would smash. The Muppets would smash. I hadn't seen the Muppets Christmas Carol up until Christmas just gone.
Wow.
I hadn't seen it. Or I might have seen it when my boys were younger, but I forgot about it. And it's incredible. The one, is it Christmas Present? The big guy. And as he's talking to him, he starts getting older and smaller. And I was crying my eyes out.
Were you there when Brett did his Muppets Christmas Carol in 9 minutes at a musical?
No, I didn't see it.
Have you ever watched it? Have you watched the clip on YouTube? Yeah. I mean, it's quite a grainy clip because I think it's just someone filming an iPhone, but it's so, because you know Brett's obsessed with Muppets Christmas Carol.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
And so he basically performs the whole thing in, I think it's 9 minutes. I think Dave was on piano, and it's just brilliant. It's such a good movie. I can't believe it took you so long to watch it.
I was never a big fan of the Muppets, weirdly. I didn't mind Sesame Street so much, but I don't know, the Muppets never really got me. But then having watched it recently, I was like, oh, this is fantastic. Mm. It's one of the best things I've ever seen.
Do you like musicals in general?
You know, I never used to. I was always a little bit, it was always a bit Amdram and jazz hands, and I know I was never really into it. And it was only being with my ex, Jade, because she was obsessed. And so it was on all the time. And so you can't help but end up having a newfound love for it. And now I do. I absolutely love it. And now my new partner, she loves musical theatre, and so it's on all the time. And I love it. And doing a musical, you know, I got to play the Phantom of the Opera. So what's not to love?
Oh, you've got to come down. So do you know about overtures where Dave plays? Do you know about this?
No.
So there's a bar in the Hippodrome Casino in Leicester Square called Overtures in the basement. And it's a bit like if anyone knows Marie's Crisis in New York. So you have someone playing show tunes effectively and everyone just singing along. So it's a bit sort of like karaoke come musical theatre. And so Dave and I went last October. We'd gone to see my dad perform. So my dad sings. We'd gone to see him at the Royal Albert Hall. So he sings in choirs. So he's in the Royal Choral Society. And they do these big concerts called Classic Spectacular, which is basically all the big classical hits. And they have like indoor fireworks and lights and lasers. Wow. Anyway, I took Dave along with me. And long story short, we managed to talk our way into a private box just to ourselves. And so we ended up having a bit too much to drink. And then we met my dad after the show for a pint, and my dad went home. And so we were like, hang on a minute, that Overtures bar that we've heard about is open. Let's go. So we went, and it was like our idea of heaven, you know, people singing Andrew Lloyd Webber or, you know, Stephen Sondheim or whatever. Anyway, fast forward a few months later, and Dave texts me. He's like, I've got a gig at Overtures. I'm going to be playing piano. I'm going to actually be the pianist. So he does that, I think, well, most weekends now, actually. And I've started going along quite regularly because it's just so fun. It's a great leveller, because it doesn't matter whether you can sing or you can't sing, or whether you like, you know, Andrew Lloyd Webber or you like Disney or whatever. It's just pure joy on a plate. So you have to come down.
I'd love that. I just never thought I'd be into it as much as I am. And just when we used to go and see a musical, the pure joy from the audience, everyone joining in, they would carry you along. Like, it didn't matter if you were shit or if you were whatever your skill level was. They just used to just carry you along with it. It was brilliant. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. I was in musicals when I was a kid at school. I played Tallulah and Bugsy Malone and did a lot of Gilbert and Sullivan, because I'm from a very musical family, so we just grew up, like, it was just second nature that you sang and you played an instrument and you played the piano and everything. So I spent my life doing a lot of that musical stuff. And then obviously, what, you know, you grow up and you move out and you get a job or whatever, and it's not really part of your life anymore. So to go back to Overtures is just, I'm upset. I mean, I feel for Dave sometimes, because I'm just stood there shouting, like, Evita, play Evita. He's like, shut up. You've had three requests already.
But you just get swept up in it, don't you? It's such a fun thing.
Yeah.
But it sounds like you had a very supportive upbringing then.
Yeah, I had, I did indeed. I was very, very lucky. I come from quite a, what one might call like a standard sort of 2.5 children. So, you know, mum and dad, and I have a brother and a sister. And had a very happy, idyllic childhood, to be honest.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, then, and then, not to get too deep, but then my mum passed away when I was only 18 years old.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, so, you know, actually, sort of the family setup changes dramatically when something like that happens. And actually what you knew when you were 5 or 10 years old now looks very different when you're sort of, you know, 30s, 40s, and et cetera. So, yeah, it was, it's a weird one. It's kind of like this weird dichotomy of having such a beautiful, happy, normal childhood, and then suddenly it all being sort of turned on its head in some ways, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But not
yeah.
in others.
How did you cope with that? I mean, because it can be a tricky thing. It can either divide a family up or bring you closer together. It's a funny one when you lose someone that's a cornerstone of the family.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the family, it definitely didn't divide us up at all. If anything, probably brought us closer, I would say. And I love spending time with my brother and my sister and my dad too, because, you know, they're the only people that really that remember her like I remember, or knew her like I knew her, because, you know, like my partner had never met her, obviously, and my friends now have never met her. It was such a weird time. It's such a weird age to lose a parent, I think, 18, because you're sort of, you're not really an adult. And I was quite an immature teenager, so I wasn't like an 18-year-old who was out and about or, you know, like doing all different kinds of things. And so, you know, I only realised the other day that I've now been alive longer without her than I was alive with her, which is really strange.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's strange. I tell you something that's helped me massively. Do you ever listen to Griefcast with Carrie Ad?
I have done, yes.
Yeah, yeah, so obviously Carrie Ad's brilliant, and she has so many different people that have been affected by bereavement on. And she said something which helped me so much. So one thing that I often struggle with is I think that I am a lot younger than I actually am. So I'm 39, and in my head I'm probably 25 at the minute.
Yeah.
In everything that I do, whether in my life and at work as well, you know, I like to have a bit of a joke, and sometimes I'm like, ooh, should I be more professional? Should I be acting more like a 39-year-old? And Carrie had said something when she was talking to Felix White, you know, from the Maccabees, who was on her podcast, and she said, because I think her father passed away when she was a similar kind of age to me, when I was, and she said that she always felt that she was frozen in time at that age that she'd lost her father. So I sometimes think that really resonated with me, and I thought, oh, hang on a minute, is it that I actually feel a bit frozen in time to back when I was 18, because that's when I lost my mum? And then I think, well, actually, I don't mind that at all, and that's really helped me accept who I am, because I'm like, well, first of all, if that's, you know, to do with sort of my mum, and my mum was very like that as well. She was a teacher, but she was like the teacher that you could have a laugh and a joke with, and all that kind of thing. So it's really helped me sort of think more about, it's okay to be like that, because that's sort of like the legacy that's been given to you.
Absolutely.
Sorry, we've gone very deep there, going from, you know, audiobooks through to...
That's the thing with a podcast. It just, people do feel they can open up. It's a safe space. And it's nice, though, because that's what it's... Because I think grief comes up quite a bit. We had Mark Lemon on. And Mark Lemon, sadly, his dad was murdered when he was 12. And he talks about it a lot. Like, that's what he does now. He helps people with their grief and understanding grief. And this is what... And loads of people have messaged in after going, I really needed that. Because no one tells you how to handle it when you lose a loved one. Because and it's come up, Ishan Akbar as well, he mentioned it when he lost his mum, and it's like they've both said that the grief doesn't go away. You just learn how to carry it around. Somehow you find a way to carry it with you, you know, and a way to kind of you remembering the good things, like, you know, remembering the good things about your mum and the person you've become now is thanks to her. So, you know, there's things like that.
You're so right there is no sort of manual or guidebook on how you're supposed to deal with bereavement or how you're supposed to behave. And I remember vividly, so I hope I'm remembering this right. I'm doing my family a massive disservice if not, but I think it was just after my mum died. And so what happens when something like that happens is you feel famous for a bit because everyone wants to come and see you. Everyone's talking about you. If you see, you get stopped in the street, oh, you know, because my mum was quite a big figure in the local community because she was a teacher. So everyone sort of knew who she was and therefore who I was. So they'd be like, oh, you know, oh, you don't know me, but I knew her. And how are you doing? So that you go through this period where you basically, it sounds really weird to say it, but you sort of feel famous. And then that stops. And it's sort of that period of quiet. We're like, okay, now what? And I think there was this moment where me, my dad and my sister and my brother were all just sat at home and no one had come round that day or something. And it was really quiet. And my dad was like, should we go bowling? And I was like, this was not something we did as a family.
No.
And I was like, hang on a minute. Are you allowed to? Are you supposed to go bowling like 7 days after your mum's died? Or is that not the done thing? And of course, there is no right or wrong. So we went bowling. Me and my family went for probably the first and last time we've ever done this in our entire lives. And it was one of the most useful and fun and cathartic afternoons because we just chucked some balls down a lane and for about 10 minutes forgot about what had been happening. But I do remember thinking like, oh, how should I react? Should I be laughing at that joke? Is that allowed? You know, should I be putting music on right now or not? It's weird. And I also often think about the age that I was. I don't, this is going to sound bad and I don't mean it like it sounds. I don't remember feeling very much. So I was obviously very, very sad, but I can't really remember those feelings. I can't remember like how bad it was or how much time I spent crying. And then I sometimes think, was I just a bit young and just a bit sort of more immune to it? And what if it was now? How would I feel now? Would I act differently now that I feel like I know much more about the world and so on and so forth? So, you know, everyone is affected differently depending on circumstances and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, that's why I find resources like things like Cariad's Griefcast podcast is just, they're just, you know, when you find that commonality, you hear something, you're like, ah, oh, I thought I was the only person that felt like that. And now I know that, you know, someone else does too. So,
That's it. Like you say, you take some kind of solace from knowing that, not in a horrible way, but you're like, oh, good, the way I'm feeling, other people have felt this way. And so I don't feel so weird and unusual. And it must be hard, because someone I know recently passed away, but I hadn't seen her for a while, but we, you know, every now and again, she'd message me and say, oh, where are you gigging? I want to come and see your gigs. And now she's not here anymore. And it's really weird. On that level, it must be even more weird when it's someone that's in your life that you'd see every day, you know, that you'd be used to walking to the kitchen and they're there, or you'd come in from somewhere and they're in the lounge, or they're around and about, and then suddenly they're not. And your brain can't comprehend that they're dead or they've passed on. Your brain's kind of like, well, where is that person? Where have they? It's always like, oh, they must be at the shops. And you're like, well, no, they're not at the shops. They're not here.
Yeah, I find it less the sort of physical, like they're not here thing, but I'm astounded that now, even now, 20, whatever, just over 20 years on, I will still be doing something and something pop into my head and I think, I must tell mum that, she'll find that hilarious. Oh, and then I go, oh, no. And that's like over 2 decades.
Wow.
I have it with Maltesers. My mum loved Maltesers. She was obsessed with Maltesers. And if I see a Maltesers bunny, which are all in the shops at the minute, my first instinct is get that or tell my mum that there's a new Malteser bunny. And then I'm like, no, hang on a minute, which is crazy. But I also like it. I really like it because it means that I don't, you know, I don't forget her, or I don't forget those little sort of quirks or those stories. And, you know, it feels like almost like she's still sort of around because, you know, Malteser bunnies are still around. How funny is that?
But I think from my own point of view, I think how I would like it is I want my loved ones, everyone, once I'm gone, I would like them to carry on with their lives and have as much fun as they can, because life is, as we know, it's fleeting, and you could be got at any minute, it could be your time. And so as difficult as it is, and like I say earlier on, I'm talking about self-doubt and stuff, I do try and focus on the fact that, as far as I'm aware, this is the only chance we get, and so we should try and make the most of it if we can.
Yeah.
And I would like the people around me to kind of go, oh, I loved him and I miss him, and think about me, but don't think that life's over just because your dad's gone or whoever. Just, like you say, you think about your mum in lovely ways and always remember her. I think what people worry about is being forgotten. once they're gone. And you know, I don't think that's ever the case, is it? You're thinking about Malteser bunnies and things like that.
Yeah. So. No, you're so right. And I think a lot about legacy as well. And I think, you know, people say to you, one thing that people say to you when you're a kid is, oh, your mum must be so proud of you. And then, you know, after she passed away, people say, oh, she'd be so proud that you did this or you got that job or whatever. And you think, and part of it is just a bit of a cliche and you're a bit like, yeah, whatever. And you think, no, do you know what? Damn right, she would be proud. And the other thing is very specific to losing a mother. And this is a gross generalization, but in general, mums are the ones that are like, notice everything and, you know, pick up on everything and be the first ones to call you. I mean, that is such doing dad's a disservice, but my dad's wonderful and brilliant. But a mum is more likely the one to be like, you know, a bit more thoughtful or whatever. So sometimes, you know, like that is something that I miss in a certain way. But then I think, well, yeah, she would be proud and I can feel like she knows, you know, what's going on, even if she's not physically here. But actually talking about what happens when you die, I was laughing to myself. You had one of my favourite people on, Jeff Lloyd, a while ago.
Oh, I love Jeff, yeah.
He lives quite close to me. So we've been on a few walks in lockdown in the park, and he's just one of the nicest people you could ever hope to meet in your entire life. But On Adrift, the podcast that he does with Annabelle Port, they were talking the other day, I think, about wanting to people that want to fake their own deaths just so you can see what the funeral would be like and see who says what and see who turns up, who cries, who doesn't, and all this kind of thing. And I thought that would make a brilliant premise either for an actual business or a film or something where you can, you know, this service where you can actually fake your own death just so you can see what people would say about you.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I think, wouldn't it be horrible though if it turns out you weren't as popular as you thought and it was like, oh my God, thank God he's gone. Jesus.
One of my favourite things that Frank Skinner always says, and I might get this wrong, he says, you can spend your whole life trying to be popular, but the size of the crowd at your funeral will be largely dictated by the weather. and I quite like that because, you know, it's quite freeing to think that, well, you know, they might not like me, but might rain on my funeral day anyway, so it doesn't matter if only two people turned up. So
yeah, that's it. Yeah. I like that. There is a thing about having a wake while you're alive. You can... Oh. Yeah, like celebrating your life before you go. I don't know.
I mean, no disrespect to anyone that's done that, but it does seem a little self-involved.
Yeah, I know. You're so up your own ass that you just can't... You can't even miss out on the party.
I mean, think how hard enough it is to get your mates together now, living in 2022, you know? It's hard enough to try and organise a night out, let alone convince them to come to pretending you're dead.
Yeah, this might be the last party I ever have, lads. You've got to just turn up and, Oh, I'm sorry, mate, I'm just doing something else.
I'm going to someone else's wake. Yeah. They asked me first, and to be honest, I prefer them, so...
Yeah. it's funny. I was on the way back from a gig last night with a comedian called Adele Cliff, and she studied biology. And so we were on the way back, and we were talking about life and death, and how it must change your viewpoint once if you've studied biology that long. You kind of, you know, you understand how humans work and how we came to be, and so to believe in anything kind of sort of spiritual, and it must be very difficult. We had a really fascinating conversation. And I don't know if I do or not.
I was going to say, do you believe? Because I was thinking about this, because I always think about it when I listen to Brett's Films to Be Buried With.
Yeah.
And, you know, he always asks people if they believe in an afterlife and also whether they think about their own death. And I was thinking about it myself in the shower the other day. And I was thinking, I never think about my own death. Like, I'm not afraid of it. I don't think, it doesn't preoccupy me. And I'm very much... If it's like you're a man of science or you're a man of faith, I'm very much a man of science. So I believe in science and I believe in the rational arguments for things. I'm not very spiritual. I don't believe, you know, that we all go to some sort of afterlife. But I do think that it's a very good metaphor for exactly what we were just talking about. So yes, I don't believe that my mum is now in some sort of other place waiting for me, but I do believe that she lives on in the thoughts and the memories and the Malteser bunnies of this world. So maybe the first people that started talking about afterlives we're actually using it more as a metaphor, which I think a lot of religion is, to be honest.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But yeah, I'm very much a rational science. Science says so, so
I'm the same. I do believe in energy. This is what I was talking about last night. I believe that our energy goes somewhere. And I've said this on here before. I used to work in an old people's home, used to do the night shift. And every morning we'd go around. Like, you check on them every hour. But then in the morning you'd go around and check on them again to make sure that everyone's right. So then the next lot coming in for the next shift, you know, they know what they're dealing with when they turn up. And so I remember walking into this one room. Can't remember his name now, this old guy. And as I opened the door, he took his last breath. And as he took his last breath, the whole room dimmed. And I don't know if it was the sun going behind a cloud or what it was, but just as he, as I walked in, I looked at him and he just went, ah. And then it went really dim. And it was like I'd seen his energy just go. It was incredible. Wow. So I believe that our energy that we've created goes off somewhere. We like you say, we become part of something else. You know, because we are just atoms and molecules and things vibrating at different ways, I think. So it goes somewhere, doesn't it?
Did you say you used to work in an old people's home?
I did, yeah. I worked in a couple of them years and years ago, 30 years ago now.
Did you watch Derek, Ricky Gervais's Derek?
I did.
Did you love it?
I thought it was bang on.
Yeah. I absolutely loved it. And I think it got a bad... No, I don't think it got bad press, but I think that people that didn't actually watch it thought it was about one thing, but it was actually about something else.
Yes, exactly. They just saw Ricky's character and that was it, yeah.
And I just, I think it's, this is going to sound very wanky, I think it's his best work. and when people are losing their mind over Afterlife, because that got such a great reaction, such a massive following, I'm like, yeah, but guys, do you know his second album, Derek?
You really
should. I thought Derek was just beautiful, the way it represented life, death, what happens to you at the end of life, dying with dignity, kindness, basically. Yeah. And so, you know, I try to spread the Derek gospel to as many people as I can. If you've not watched Derek and you want to be uplifted in a weird way, then you should watch it.
Yeah, definitely.
And there's that one scene, no spoilers, but whatever. There's that scene at the end of, I think, the second series where his dad, who he's reconnected with, he sends his dad away because it's too traumatic to actually... and then the taxi stops and the dad gets out and Coldplay's playing in the background and they're reunited. And I just sometimes just put that on for like 10 times straight, just over and over, just to have a good old cry because it's just such a beautiful programme. But yeah, just made me think of that, thinking about, you know, old people's homes and...
Yeah, it's one of those things. Derek was bang on. There was a couple of nurses. Most nurses are like the Kerry Godliman character. And they care and they go above and beyond. But there were so many people involved, and especially the people that own the care homes, that were just horrible, greedy people that didn't give a shit about the people that they were just there to just take their money from them. And that's why I had to stop working in that industry, because I was always arguing with people. There was one particular staff nurse that when she was on, I used to hate working with her, because we'd turn up for the night shift, we'd change over, she'd push two chairs together in the lounge and she'd just put a blanket on, watch telly and go to sleep. And we used to argue all the time, because I'd go up. I'm not trying to paint myself as, you know, Superman, but I was there because I wanted to take care of people. And me and her used to, because she was like, what are you doing? I said, well, we've got to check on them. There's one particular woman that would get in all kinds of distress if you left her for too long. So, you know, you always had to check on them. And this one woman used to just drive me mad. And no one did anything about it. So in the end, I'm like, I can't work here anymore. And that's what happens. People that give a shit actually get driven out, because there's too many people that don't give a shit running the things. You know, it's really sad that you've worked well hard all your life and then you end up in a place like that, and all you're down to your bare minimum belongings, you know, and it just makes me sad. That's why I want to go in a weird way. I want to just be walking along one day and a piano falls on me. Or just, you know what I mean? Just something happens.
A piano playing Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah. Or just something will... I'll just end up, I'll walk into a big hole, or aliens will take me somewhere, or just, I don't know, something unusual. I don't want the long drawn out thing where no one cares, or you can't wipe your own backside. And
oh God,
you know, I might Hunter S. Thompson myself and just take myself off.
Oh anyway. God, this is taking a turn.
You never know where it's going to go.
No.
But on the whole, with your, this is the way things are at the minute, you know, it does feel like the world's in a bit of disarray. How's your mental health, really? Are you holding up all right?
Yeah, I am. I've been incredibly lucky because I, first of all, you know, as I said, I had a very happy and so, I mean, in some ways, privileged upbringing, you know, and so I've always traditionally or historically been quite, you know, I've had quite an even keel when it comes to mental health. And then with the pandemic, again, we were so lucky because, you know, podcasting was thriving because everyone was listening to podcasts. People were making podcasts. It could continue. Everyone just pivoted to making them remotely, which is now just like the standard.
Yeah.
So I had a good, enjoyable job that was really busy. You know, I don't have kids. We live in a nice place. We, Adam and I, my partner, we had each other. So, I feel bad saying it out loud sometimes, but we were quite lucky because, I didn't have some of the problems that, you know, my friends had, like, you know, losing their jobs or being stuck homeschooling whilst trying to, you know, work at the same time and so on and so forth. So, as a result, you know, I've been all right the past few years, and my mental health's generally a good place, and I put a lot of it down to running. So I've been running nonstop for the last 12, 13 years.
Oh, amazing.
And I never, ever started it as a pursuit thinking like, oh, this is good for one's mental health, you know. I started it just because I'm competitive, and I decided to see if I could run 5K because I read about Catelyn Moran. She wrote a piece in the Times about how she got into running. I was like, oh, let's see if I can run 5K. And once I mastered that, my natural next reaction, being so competitive, was like, let's see if I can run a marathon.
Wow.
And since then, I've run like 13 marathons. And
oh, my
so,
God.
Yeah, and I never realised that it really massively helps with, you know, sorting out your feelings or stress or whatever. Because of course it does, and everyone talks about that, but I'd never seen it like that. And now I definitely think that it has helped me so much over the last sort of decade,
which is why
I will chew anyone's ear off about the benefits of just even just getting outside. Doesn't even have to be running, could just be walking. But So yeah, I think I definitely use exercise as a bit of a tool, I would suppose.
Oh, absolutely. Do you know what? It's funny. There's a guy I look at on Facebook called James Harris.
Mm.
And he's just very matter of fact in the way, you know, he's a PT, you know, a PT. And he says, look, you don't need to, just watch your calories. You can still eat what you want, but just watch what you're eating and just go outside. You don't even have to run. Just walk, or take the stairs instead of the escalators, and or instead of the elevator, and just that's all you need to do. I was doing that in the last lockdown. I wasn't running, but I was just putting my headphones on and I was just going out, and I was walking for 3 hours, just walking around Vicky Park and back again. If you just go for a walk, that's all you need to do, and you'll feel so much better.
Yeah, I mean, God, this is going to sound really sort of twee, but running's also given me so I'm obsessed with Park Run as well. So you know Park Run?
No, what's
that? So Park Run are free timed weekly 5Ks that happen in parks all around the world, actually, but loads in England. So my local one is in Highbury Fields. It's entirely run by volunteers. So 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning, about 300 people turn up and they run 5K around the park. You get, you get your official time and you can track your progress and number of runs. But more than that, it's just like this brilliant, I'm going to use the C word again, community, incredible community of the volunteers and all the runners. And I do it every Saturday. I volunteer as well. And I have made so many friends for life just from doing that as well, which I think in London is particularly hard. And it's just, it's another thing that just keeps me going throughout the week. Just, it's Park Run on Saturday. Can't wait.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm constantly trying to recruit people to A, running, B, Park Run, and then volunteering at Park Run as well, because it's just vibes on vibes.
Well, this is it. And that's what, especially more so than ever, we do need, like you say, that that community. We do need to feel like we're part of something, and there are people around us, and we can all support each other, because it's so easy to feel alone and not part of, not to have anyone around you, and feel, you know, unsupported, and that's like, you know, and like you say, it feels weird, but once you do it, you'll feel so much better, you know. On a smaller level, when you just say, "Should we meet for coffee?" Go and meet for coffee. Or go around someone's house and say, "All right, yeah, I'll come round," or "come round to mine." That's because that's what we missed in the lockdowns. The fact that we were so disconnected from everybody else, and we're social creatures.
Yeah.
There we are. Lizzie, this has been amazing. We've gone everywhere, all over the place. I never know where this is going to go, and I'm always pleased when it takes me places I didn't expect.
Yeah.
So wonderful.
Well, thank you so much. It's been absolute pleasure. Just to chat.
It's been wonderful to finally get to have some decent time with you. Where can we find you on the socials?
Oh, you know, you can find me on Twitter, Lizzie P, L-I-Z-Z-Y-P, if you like. I can't promise much. There's a lot of tweeting about podcasts. but yeah, if that's your thing, come and have a look.
Lovely. And is there any advice you'd give to anyone who wants to start a podcast?
Yeah, just do it. Start before you're ready. I know that's such a cliche. It's really not that hard. And if you, I think the fear stops people, you know, oh, I won't be interesting, or people won't find what I've got to say interesting. But I go back to what I said earlier, even if one person listens and gets something from that, then job done. So just crack on, don't overthink it.
Excellent
and
advice.
Come to acast.com for
absolutely
free hosting.
Yeah, love Acast. Thank you, Lizzie, so
thank
much.
Thank you.
If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift giving to the next level, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.